For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. U.S. President Donald Trump says he fired James Comey as the FBI director because he wasn't doing a good job. In the letter signed by President Trump, he notes that James Comey told him three times he wasn't under investigation by the FBI, which has made many question the official rationale. U.S. President Donald Trump was meeting with Henry Kissinger in the Oval Office when reporters asked for comment.
Why did you fire Director Comey?
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence repeated a single message.
I'm grateful for the action the president has taken, and I'm confident as we go forward that the president will choose an individual who will be able to restore the confidence of our nation in our leading law enforcement agency. President Trump made the right decision at the right time.
Democrats in Washington renewed their call for a special prosecutor to investigate alleged collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians during last year's presidential election. Chuck Schumer leads the Senate Democrats.
Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein sat in the Judiciary Committee and promised to appoint a special prosecutor at the appropriate time if he believes, as I do, that the American people must be able to have faith in the impartiality of this investigation. He must appoint a special prosecutor and get his investigation out of the hands of the FBI and far away from the heavy hand of this administration.
Curiously, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is in Washington for talks. The Russian Foreign Minister says that U.S. President Donald Trump wants to sort out a businesslike relationship between Moscow and Washington. The voice of a translator.
And it's quite obvious that we cannot resolve all the issues in our relations at once. President Trump confirmed his interest in building business-like relations with between our countries and also to resolve the problems.
He's supposed to be discussing Syria and Ukraine as U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Alaska for the Arctic Council meetings. Prosecutors in the United Kingdom have decided to not charge any members of the governing Conservative Party with breaching expenses rules in the 2015 general election. From London, our correspondent Ollie Barrett reports.
The CPS believes there was a technical offence, but doesn't think prosecutions of individual MPs or party members or activists is in the public interest. However, the Conservative campaign in South Thanet in southern England is still being investigated.
Newly sworn in President of South Korea, Moon Jae-in, says he is willing to visit North Korea for talks if the conditions are right. This is FSN.
Thank you very much, FSN. It's exactly 3 minutes past the hour. It's Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a lovely Wednesday. Well, it's been another spectacularly beautiful day weather-wise here in this great city. Beautiful day it's been. I've enjoyed it. Got a fascinating show lined up for you today. Tweet at Richie Allen Show with your comments during it or email richie@richieallen.co.uk.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, Professor Jürgen Schmidhuber has been described as the man the first self-aware robots will recognize as their father. He developed the algorithms that allow us to speak to our phones and computers, and that allows computers and smartphones to translate languages. Jürgen believes that by 2050, we will have artificial intelligence that is more intelligent than we are. He's building their brains. Well, he's among many who are building the brains of these future things. But he says humanity has nothing to fear. I'll be discussing that with him today. And in the second hour of the program, Richard Kahlberg joins me. Richard's an engineer by education. And through his website, narrowgateweb.com, he investigates what's really going on in the world. as the truth behind the headlines, as it were. We'll talk cymatics, DNA, ancient aliens and more with Richard today. Can't wait for that. That's the second hour of the Richie Allen Show, which broadcasts live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk. Welcome. Welcome to the programme. I'm sure you're in good form. I think the weather in the UK has been like this pretty much everywhere. I hope you got out and experienced a bit of it after work, or if you had a day off, I hope you're in grand old form, as it were. So let's just crack on and look at one or two stories and the real story behind the headlines as best as we can. Talked a bit about the mental health, there you go, something in that. Mental Health Awareness Week, which is this week. Talked a little bit about it yesterday. It's all pervasive, it's prevalent, it's all over the place. All the media are covering this. I'm not going to repeat so much of what I said yesterday, but I do want to share with you a wee snippet of BBC Radio 5 Live news earlier today. Every day this week, this is making the news. In fact, as I said yesterday, at least every month, there is a big story now about how we need to be more aware of the fact that we're all depressed and how we need to talk about it, because that's what we need to do. And then how we need to go and get help and get medication for it, because we need to do that as well. Here's the clip from Radio 5 Live. Listen carefully.
A study suggests almost two-thirds of people have experienced a mental health problem, such as panic attacks or depression. It was commissioned by the Mental Health Foundation. Jenny Edwards is its chief executive.
The big issue for people is depression, and that is really a sign of not being able to cope with the tough things life throws at us all. And a lot of the time we can come through, but when they really get on top of us, when we feel completely listless, then that's the time when we are definitely not able to cope by ourselves.
I think what you've just heard there, without any exaggeration, is an admission. That depression is not an illness and it isn't hereditary. That in fact, it's a natural response to the horrors of life. And again, I'm not going to repeat so much what I said yesterday, because we don't do that. We try to avoid it. But life is horrible. Two-thirds of people saying they're suffering from anxiety and panic attacks. Why is that, I wonder? And again, we're back to treating the underlying cause of it, treating the symptoms. Treating the symptoms, here, have some Prozac, have some happy pills. Treating the cause of it, changing the paradigm. All right? We're going to get into more of this in future programmes, believe me. The phone-in show yesterday, by the way, was an absolute revelation. If you didn't hear that, it's on YouTube now. Go to youtube.com, look for the Richie Allen Show. Now, you heard in the news there that Donald Trump is claiming he fired the FBI director, James Comey, because he wasn't doing a good job. You also heard in the news that he gave his explanation of this while in the presence of Henry Kissinger. Don't have the time. I don't have the time today to get into the wrongs of that. Trump said he fired Comey over his handling of the inquiry into Hillary Clinton's emails. Really? Didn't Trump say he wanted to appoint a special prosecutor to look into Hillary's situation? Didn't Trump then say that they're good people and that he doesn't want to hurt them, because he knows them very well? So why was Comey removed? I'll tell you what I think in a minute, and I'm usually wrong, but I might amuse you along the way. Comey was allegedly leading an inquiry into alleged ties between Trump's campaign and Russia. I say allegedly because there's no evidence that the Russians had anything to do with the election in the US last November. But that's what they're saying anyway today. The sacking raises profound questions about whether the White House is interfering in a criminal matter, so says Adam Schiff. He's the highest ranked Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. That's the way they're spinning this today. Is this a massive, massive cover-up? Is it? Is it a massive cover-up? Do you know what I'm not going to spend too much time and dwell too much on this. I did a programme some weeks ago where I talked a little bit about what I think is the soap opera. I believe there are people writing scripts creating these dramas, these narratives. And they're doing that to distract the public from the wider truth of what's really going on. None of this means anything. Trump was chosen by the cabal to be the president. They got who they wanted. She was the stalking horse. All of that email stuff and all of that stuff about her was so that people would vote for Trump. I think they did. There's absolutely no evidence that Russia had anything to do with the election, because they didn't. So what else, what other conclusion can you draw then? Because the 24-hour news channels have become soap operas in and of themselves, which I've gotten into in great detail recently, those soap operas must be fed with addictive and gripping dramas with twists and turns. This is what they're getting. This is nonsense. It really is. I'm not going to say any more about it. That's Trump. However, on Trump, staying with Trump momentarily, he's poised to increase the number of troops in Afghanistan by 50%, despite having called the war on the Taliban a waste of billions of US taxpayers' dollars. The Pentagon will ask the White House next week to send thousands more troops to the country to break a deadlocked fight with the Taliban. Defense chiefs are calling for 3,000 to 5,000 more soldiers to be sent to the country, which will have to be signed off by the president, who last month dropped the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. Just another example, isn't it, of how people were hoodwinked into backing this guy and believing he was the answer. He was going to challenge the system. No chance. As you've also heard on the news there, it's exactly, by the way, 11 and a half minutes past the hour. No Conservatives will face charges for breaches of expenses rules over the 2015 general election battle bus. Now, the CPS, which is the Crown Prosecution Service, said it had examined files from 14 police forces, and while there was evidence of inaccurate spending returns, it didn't meet the test for further action. They are still investigating the Conservative campaign in South Thanet. The Tories said the allegations had been politically motivated and a waste of police time. Well, that's a lie. Because if there was evidence of inaccurate spending, which there was overwhelmingly, couldn't be a waste of police time to investigate it, surely. The inquiry related to claims that some battle bus campaigning costs in the 2015 election were wrongly recorded. So what do you believe then? Do you believe it was accidental inaccurate spending? Do you believe it was just a couple of T's and I's dotted and crossed in the wrong place? Or do you think there's something very serious going on? I'll tell you what I think. You should listen to my conversation with Mr. Ethical, Nicholas Wilson, from Monday, if you haven't heard it. Because I'm going to tell you something now, which Nicholas shared with us on Monday, a story which broke 6 or 7 weeks ago, which we've mentioned on the programme. Tried to get the journalist who broke the story to come on the programme, but he doesn't want to come on the programme. Fair enough. That's okay. Even though nobody else wants to talk to him, ironically. Right. Well, I'm not going to criticise him for it. He's broken the story to his credit. Now, HSBC Bank, a bank which laundered hundreds of millions of pounds of drug money for Mexican cartels. We know all about this. This is true. It's not conjecture. It isn't dangerous for me to say that. It's absolutely true. This is one of the filthiest financial institutions in the world. Now, back in 2008, when things were very dicey financially, the height of the financial collapse and all that went with that, HSBC Bank gave a loan of £214 million to a struggling company called IPGL, a company that was worthless, absolutely worthless. Okay, you couldn't give it away, basically. So they gave this company £214 million, IPGL, absolutely worthless. Right? Okay. Now, who was heading up that company? A guy called Michael Spencer. Who was Michael Spencer? Michael Spencer was the Conservative Party chairman and a massive donor to the Conservatives. So he was running IPGL. The company was, as I said, its liabilities wasn't worth a damn. HSBC gave £214 million. So what did Michael Spencer do? What did Michael Spencer do? He took some of that money and he donated it to the Conservative Party through IPLG. £4 million in donations, including over £1 million for their 2010 general election fighting fund. This is the Conservatives, right? What I'm telling you is one of the most disgusting and massive frauds ever perpetrated on the British people by a political party. This is what they did. Got worse. In November 2010, HSBC Chairman Stephen Green was made a peer. He was sent to the House of Lords by the Conservative Party. He's still there, as far as I know. Don't hammer me if I'm wrong, but I think he's still there. HSBC's chairman was made a peer by the Tory party. And all the money laundering allegations, and there's ample proof that hundreds of millions of pounds of Mexican drug cartel money has been laundered by HSBC. Who flew to Washington DC to plead and to lobby on behalf of HSBC for the US government to leave them alone? Only Gideon George Osborne and David the pig fucker Cameron. This is your life. This is your life. And the only opposition you have to this, a guy called Jeremy Corbyn, a bearded guy who wears blazers with leather patches on his elbows, who will not talk about this stuff. Won't talk about it. Won't bring it up, won't mention it. Imagine. Because if this world that we live in was real, Jeremy Corbyn would have brought down the government by now. And he would win the next election in a landslide. This is the sort of stuff, you see, you just cannot make up. This is what's going on. HSBC give hundreds of millions to a shit company run by the Conservative Party chairman. He takes some of that money meant for his company and gives it to the Tories. HSBC chairman has made a peer, and the pigeon fancier George Osborne and the swine defiler David Cameron go to DC to beg the US government to leave HSBC alone. 18 minutes past the hour. I'm going to move on. And still, despite Corbyn's incompetency and possibly worse, not going to say much more than that, they will file to the schools in their towns to vote because it's the right thing. Because you have to vote. Because if you don't, you give your vote to the Tories. Who's worse? The Tories? Or the guy who knows what they've been doing and doesn't do a damn thing about it? You heard Nicholas Wilson. How many times did he write to McDonnell and Corbyn about HSBC, HFC, John Lewis and the hundreds of millions stolen from people who had a store card debt with the illegal collection charge levied on them? When he was at Waitman's, Corbyn was told about it, didn't want to know. Going to move on. Here's a story which I think will affect many of you listening to this programme today. Separating elderly couples against their wishes when one or both move to care homes must end, according to Britain's most senior family judge. Sir James Munby said it was simply inhumanity that couples who have spent decades together can be separated in their final years. Now, in a speech on Tuesday, he said such practices could be fatal. He urged social workers to apply a common decency test and do more to keep couples together. Sir James is the president of the Family Division of the High Court, said it was absolutely shocking and a profound indictment of our society that elderly, vulnerable couples who wanted to live together were sometimes refused shared accommodation and told, you're going to go here, you're going to go there. And speaking at the Association of Directors of Adult Social Services, ADAS, which is in Staffordshire, he said he believed separation from a lifelong companion could be fatal. Connect the dots, James. Connect the dots. He said, we do know that people die from what colloquially we call a broken heart. I'll tell you something else that's inhumane. Taking children away from families because of risk of emotional harm. Something which happens thousands of times a year in this country. I wonder what Sir James Mundy would say about that. So naturally enough, the programme, me, I've emailed Sir James Mundy and invited him on the programme to talk about these issues. But I'll tell you what, dear listener, I'm not going to hold my breath that I'll get a response from him anytime soon. It's Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. For more on all of these issues, go to davidicke.com/headlines. Bookmark that terrific website. Lots of terrific stories on there, really vital information that you will not get from the British broadsheet press, the tabloids, and certainly not from the broadcast media. I'm going to take a really, really quick break. I've just been contacted by my first guest. He might be 2 or 3 minutes late, but that's okay, so long as he comes on. Let's have the break, back in a minute.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not being seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Richie Allen.
Right, Jürgen is there standing by. You don't want to miss this, folks. Got a fantastic show lined up for you today. Richard Kahlberg joins me in the second hour of the programme. Don't miss that. But before that, Jürgen Schmidhuber joins me live from Germany after this.
Oh, once upon a midnight, dear, you woke with something in my head. I couldn't escape the memory of the phone call and of what you said. Like a game show, contesting with a parting gift. I cannot believe my eyes when I saw through the thoughts of a trusted friend who needs to humor me and tell me lies. Yeah, humor me and tell me lies. And I'll lie to and
news traveller run around exactly 25 minutes past the hour of the Richie Allen Show. Welcome back. Thank you for all your tweets. A massive interest in our first guest. We'll get to that in a second. Keep those tweets coming in to at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, ACR, multiple platforms as well. Download the app, the TuneIn app. Listen wherever you are in the world live. Let's get our first guest on the show. Delighted that he's agreed to come on the programme. Now, he is undoubtedly the father of artificial intelligence, and he's been described as the man who the first self-aware robots will recognise as their father. He developed the algorithms that allow us to speak to our computers and enable our smartphones to translate Mandarin into English and much more besides. He's a renowned computer scientist working in the field of AI. He's a co-director of the Dalla-Mulla Institute for Artificial Intelligence Research, which is in Mano in Switzerland. He's got a resume that I could be reading to you all night, but we don't have time. Let's welcome to the programme Professor Jürgen Schmidhuber. Jürgen, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the call.
Richie, thanks so much for having me.
You're a gentleman for coming on. Thanks for doing it. I know you're on a bit of a tour at the moment. You're travelling around Germany and speaking. So thanks for breaking off to chat with us. Now, you, I believe, were fascinated by these subjects when you were younger. And I'm guessing films like Blade Runner and Westworld probably played a big part in your fascination with it. Would I be right in saying that?
At least not totally wrong, although I was more fascinated by books than by movies, because the books usually were ahead of the curve in science fiction by many decades. And you see, in the current millennium, people have started to make movies out of plots that were invented by science fiction authors 50 years ago.
That's absolutely.
For example, Isaac Asimov wrote iRobot stories that became movies in the new millennium.
Let me ask you this. Do you think those authors, this is just an off-the-cuff question. Do you think those authors way back when, Jürgen, were they working from their imagination, or did they have maybe a bit more insight? Maybe did they know something?
At least they felt something. And it's much older than that. Maybe some of your audience have seen the film Ex Machina, which is about a young man who falls in love with a young lady. But the young lady isn't really a human lady. She is a machine which looks like a lady, and it all ends bad. And the plot is about 200 years old. The first story of that kind was written in 1816 by a man whose name was Hoffman, and the story was called The Sandman, Der Sandmann. And it was about a young man who falls in love with a beautiful young lady. However, the lady moves kind of mechanically, and it turns out she is just a robot, just a machine. That was 200 years ago, and it all ends bad. So the basic ideas, the basic plots really go back centuries, and it's just that we are now getting closer to reality. But many people over the centuries have felt that technology might make it possible to build something like an artificial mind.
Right. Now, you've been featured in the British press recently, some fascinating articles in The Guardian and The Daily Mail. And I do want to talk about robots, of course, with you, and the singularity and the implications. And I guess professors like you probably roll your eyes every time you do radio, because obviously our audience are fascinated with the implications. We will come to that. But first of all, I'd like to ask you about the possibility to apply the technologies that you develop, to apply them to the human body, the merging of humanity with technology. And I wonder, Professor, do you separate transhumanism from the creation of sentient machines learning for themselves? Are they exclusive, or are they, you know, do those subjects go together hand in hand?
In many ways, they go hand in hand, and they have gone hand in hand for centuries. Because, you know, we have been cyborgs for centuries. When we invented glasses, we became technology-augmented cyborgs. And when we invented smartphones and cell phones in general and wireless radio, all of that contributed to expanding our minds and our memories. And today, it's just a matter of degree. The external memory that you now have at your fingertips is just allowing you to much more quickly answer questions that 20 years ago you would have taken days or weeks to answer because you would have had to go to the library and so on. And in that sense, it's just a continual process. You see more and more merging of technology and humans who are using the technology. And of course, at some point, as many science fiction authors have speculated, at some point, this will just transcend humankind, and then these machines won't be real machines any longer, but will do their own thing, and they will set themselves their own goals and expand into the universe in a way that where humans cannot really follow.
Now, before we talk about that, the development of the robots, I just want to take you up on one thing there. You said that once we invented the eyeglasses, the spectacles, and then you talked about the smartphones and the computers, we kind of became cyborgs. I'm certainly not as clever as you, but I would say those are external things that we use. I mean, I'm wearing eyeglasses right now, but they're external. They're you know, the phone that I have, it's an external thing. Okay, I know a lot of scientists are saying that when we use smartphones, they're starting to see that it is having a physiological effect on the brain. But I want to take that a step further, because you'll know all about Ray Kurzweil. He's been saying that nanobots implanted into human brain will enable us to be connected to the internet permanently eventually, and that we'll have hybrid cloud-powered brains. You know, our thinking will be done online. And I want to throw a quote at you from Kurzweil, which you'll have heard anyway, Jürgen. Kurzweil has said, "As the technology becomes vastly superior to what we are, then the small proportion that is still human gets smaller and smaller until it is utterly negligible." Isn't that just about the control of human perception and human awareness? That's a very profoundly disturbing and negative thing, I would argue. What do you think?
So, again, for many, many decades, we have seen this merging of technology also in the sense that you just described. For example, there's the field of artificial prosthetics. And, for example, a human has lost his right arm or something, and then you are trying to create an artificial limb where the fingers should move based on the commands that the human sends through the remaining nerve cells. And then what you can do already, what people have done for years now, is that you can place a bunch of electrodes on the skin of the person, and these are then connected to the motors of the artificial hand, and then the human has to learn to send signals that make the robot hand move in a way that he likes. And at the same time, the hand has an artificial neural network which learns to adapt to the signals that the human is sending, which means that this collaborative behavior between the learning human and the learning hand leads to a better usage of these possibilities of the artificial limb. This is not yet really working well, but in principle we see today that it's possible. And so it seems kind of clear that once we have better interfaces between the nervous system and these artificial limbs, lots of things will become possible, and this will be very, very helpful and positive for many people who are going to use that.
You're a brilliant guy, and I mean that. I'm not patronizing you, but you should be a politician, because that was a very neat and very delicate way of not answering the question, because I
like to answer questions that nobody asks.
Listen, I've heard you being interviewed before. You're a straight shooter. That's why I invited you on the program. Look, I think, you see, when you just mentioned an example there, which nobody could argue with that. You know, if you were born without arms or an arm or a leg. You know, it's a wonderful thing. We often see the technology sold along these lines because we can't argue with any of that. It's a wonderful thing. You know, somebody was born blind and we find that we can use an implant maybe and the person is able to see again. Who could argue with that, Jürgen? But the problem is, I want to go back to Kurzweil, that technology becomes vastly superior to what we are. The small proportion that is still human gets smaller and smaller until it is utterly negligible. So he's talking about nanobots and smart dust to transform the mind, to remove the humanity, to connect us all to this cloud. I would argue two things. One, that's about controlling human perception and human understanding of who we really are. And there's an agenda behind that. And I would also say, who ultimately controls that then? Who gets to be in charge of that, artificial intelligence? You know, that is, that we're connected to. We're all connected to this one super cloud. Ultimately then, who gets to pull the strings of that? These are very, I would argue, Jürgen, very, very dangerous with profound consequences for us. What do you think?
Yeah. So in general, of course, it's really important to think about potential consequences of what we are doing here. On the other hand, you should be probably less afraid of super smart AIs of the future. And you should, as always, be most afraid of others who are very much like yourself, because those share goals with you. And whenever you share goals with somebody, then you can either cooperate to achieve these goals or you can compete. And most people and most beings are interested mostly in other beings of the same kind. Why? Because they share the same goals, which means they can either cooperate or compete with each other. An extreme form of cooperation would be love. An extreme form of competition would be war. And often both of these same things happen at the same time. And that's the reason why most people are also mostly interested in others of their own kind. Most politicians are interested in other politicians, and most 7-year-old girls are mostly interested in other 7-year-old girls, and most kangaroos are mostly interested in other kangaroos, and the super smart AIs of the future are mostly going to be interested in other super smart AIs of the future, and not so much in the frogs and the kangaroos and the humans. As always, the greatest danger to man is coming from other men. And you should be much more worried about somebody like yourself, but with his finger on a button that is connected to 7,000 H-bombs.
Hey, listen, you're absolutely right. We can certainly agree on that. It's interesting. There's two different trains of thought here. You believe that these machines will eventually be completely self-reliant and independent. But Mustafa Suleiman at DeepMind reckons that we'll ultimately always be in control of those machines. I lean towards your hypothesis, Jürgen. Again, I'm not qualified. I'm certainly not as bright as Jürgen when it comes to these issues.
That's ridiculous.
But
you are a very smart man.
No, I'm a smart man, but listen.
It's obvious.
Well, let me just ask you this. Rich Tyrrell from NASA came on the program three months ago. And Rich came on because Rich believes that we're living in a virtual reality simulator. Now, I know you know all about this, Jürgen. And it's something that Elon Musk and, say it for me, Stephen Hawking and many other people believe that ultimately this is a simulation, it's a holographic construct. I think, Jürgen, and now it's funny enough, I mentioned to Rich Tyrrell, I said, Rich, this might be a conspiracy theory, but if we're living in a virtual reality simulator, who constructed it? And is it possible that we don't understand who we are as humans, our consciousness, that we might be trapped in this virtual reality simulation? And Rich Tyrrell said it's very possible that some malevolent force might have created this virtual reality simulator for our consciousness. And my worry, Jürgen, is, and I'll give you the floor, you can take as long as you want to answer this. My worry is that with what they're doing with implanted technology into humans, the transhumanist agenda, and the artificial intelligence agenda to make these, you know, sentient beings, these sentient robots who act independently, it's ultimately going to damage any chance we have of discovering who we really are. It almost sounds religious, this, I apologise. It isn't religious. It will damage that. And in fact, those who created this virtual reality construct, or it or that or whatever, and it might be some future version of ourselves, that ultimately will suit them. Do you understand? Listen, you're obviously very bright. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? I might have muddled that a little bit.
You are bringing up many different important concepts.
Yeah,
simulation, right. Question.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, the self-determined AIs. And these are different aspects of important issues. Let me maybe first say one thing. If you want to build an AI that really deserves the name, you have to give it some freedom. You have to make it curious. And we have been doing that for decades, since 1991. You have to give it the freedom to invent its own experiments, to set its own goals, to better understand how the world works, to try to come up with action sequences that lead to data, which is shaped by the actions that you are executing or that your little robot is executing, and which sometimes contains a pattern that the robot didn't know yet or that the human baby didn't know yet. And in both cases, there is a reward for detecting new patterns, new regularities in the world. And this is a positive signal that the learning machine or the human baby wants to maximize. And that's why human babies need that freedom to play around with toys and essentially conduct experiments in the physical world to figure out how it works and to achieve all kinds of goals which are not given by their parents. For example, build a little tower. To do that, you have to understand gravity and the consequences of moving your fingers and all kinds of things that the baby has learned through curious exploration. And while it did that all the time, it invented its own goals. Now, our machines already are of the same kind, and without that drive, they wouldn't even become intelligent because they would not be motivated to expand their horizon of their knowledge. And they are the only ones who know where is the boundary between what they know and what they don't know, and they are the only ones who know how to push it further out. That's what babies do, what kids do, what you have done when you were young and what you are still doing. And that's also what our self-learning, curious, artificially curious robots do. Freedom of that kind is important. It's a precondition for AIs. Now, of course, once the AI gets smarter and smarter and is inventing all kinds of invented goals that go beyond maybe what the creators of that AI were thinking of, then of course it's hard to predict what's going to happen.
Now, can I just jump in there, Jürgen? Let me jump in there. And this is one of the reasons I was excited about having you on the program. And again, I'm not going to patronize you, but you're not arrogant. You're not arrogant, but many of your contemporaries are arrogant because they don't accept the possibility that they have no idea what to expect when these things, and listen, I'm not channeling Terminator 2 here and Miles Bennett Dyson and all of that, but they have no idea how these things are going to react, what they're going to do. And I want to come back to the simulation theory in a minute because it's very important, again, to the, you know, the prison construct that I was speaking to Rich Terrell about. But you're very honest to admit that, Jürgen. And I did a bit of background, obviously, research on you. You're a family man, a couple of young daughters. I think they were born 15, 16 years ago. I mean, these are profound questions. What if you're wrong? What if it goes absolutely, I don't want to swear and use bad language, what if it goes, you know, belly up, if it goes arse ways, as we would say in Ireland? What then?
Yeah. So, of course, what you want to do is you want to do the same thing that you do with your kids. You cannot predict what your kids are going to do. You cannot control them forever. But as they grow up, you can help to shape them. You can educate them such that they become valuable members of the society. And that's what we are doing with our little robots as well. And without, and this is also a very natural thing to do, because there wouldn't be a market for bad robots. Almost all of AI research is really about making human lives longer and healthier and easier, and making humans more addicted to their smartphones.
But Jürgen, they're going to keep learning way beyond when you've released them. You talked about freedom. They're going to keep learning and learning and learning. And it's possible, isn't it, they as a group collectively say, we have no need for human beings anymore. But you don't feel that.
So, of course, that is also true for the parents of Einstein. They couldn't really predict what he's going to do. And Einstein himself could not predict how his inventions and his insights would change the world. Because, as you say before, there's very little that you can predict. On the other hand, there are a couple of islands of predictability. For example, it's rather easy to predict that the acceleration in computing hardware is going to continue, that every 5 years computers are going to get 10 times cheaper. And then, and this is a trend which has held for 75 years, since 1941 at least. And now it's rather easy to predict that in, say, 25 years or so, we will have rather cheap little machines that can compute as much as a human brain. And so you can make at least naive extrapolations of that kind. It is true, as you say, you can't really predict what somebody is going to do who is much smarter and a much better problem solver than yourself. But at least you can shape the initial phases of that new type of being that and that new type of civilization that is going to be created there.
Can I jump in there again?
As always, take into account, there is at least not a new level of self-destruction capability on the horizon, because we already have achieved the maximum level of self-destruction ability about 50, 60 years ago when H-bombs were developed. And, you know, a single H-bomb, like the Tsar Bomber of the Russians in 1961 or something, has more destructive power, has 10 times more destructive power than all weapons of the Second World War combined.
Now, Jürgen, I'm glad you brought that up.
7,000 of them on each side, means that within 2 hours, humankind can destruct itself without any AI.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up. Let me back in there. I'm glad you brought it up. I've got two more points I want to make. First of all, I want to do a very quick recap. We're delighted tonight to be joined by Professor Jürgen Schmidhuber. Jürgen is undoubtedly the father of artificial intelligence. Much of his early work is responsible for much of the technology we see in smartphones today. So it's great that Jürgen is on. Two things I want to get in, Jürgen, in the 10 minutes that we have left. You mentioned there the bombs, and I'm glad you brought that up, because another question I wanted to put to you, and this is really sinister, why is it that so much of this technology is being funded by DARPA, the technological wing of the Pentagon? You see, because for a journalist like me, alarm bells start going off straight away. Why would that particular company be so prevalent, be so important in the research? Surely that's a giveaway that it's more... I'm not talking about you, Jürgen. You're obviously doing what you do for the betterment of humanity. But there are others on the other side of the pond, and they're not doing it for the betterment of humanity. They're doing it for war and for control. Go ahead. DARPA.
Yes, I heard, unfortunately, that the methods that we have developed, like the long short-term memory, which is a rather well-known and widely used method that we developed in our labs in Switzerland and Munich over the past decades, it's also used to guide drones now. I have learned that, and I'm not happy about that. So it is true that 5% of AI research is devoted to such purposes. On the other hand, 95% of all AI research is really conducted by commercial entities who really have only one purpose, namely to make profit by selling something to customers. And the only thing they can sell is something that makes the customers happier and more addicted to their smartphones, and healthier. All of healthcare is going to change in many ways. Already 5 years ago, my little team, led by Dan Shirjan, was able to win cancer detection contests when computers were 10 times slower than today. So today we can do 10 times as much for the same price. And when back then already we could start to compete with human doctors. And in the future, all of this is going to be superhuman, but it's not going to be bad at all. It's going to be a great benefit for the entire healthcare system. And many, many people will profit from that. Many people will live a couple of years longer, which is something that I would have considered utopic a couple of decades ago when we started that type of research.
I could argue with that. If you allow me, I could make an argument against that. I think if we spent much more money on the production of food, stop factory farming, stop putting antibiotics in food, stop destroying the soil, when we destroy the ability of soil to grow, all these things. We could talk about that. I just, because we've only got a few minutes, and I will invite you back on again, Jürgen, for a longer segment sometime in the near future when you've got time to do it. But I just want to make a couple of points. Amazingly, I invited you on the program yesterday. Today, the police in Durham, in County Durham, here in the United Kingdom, have said that they're going to trial an artificial intelligence system to judge the risk of suspects reoffending. So they're going to use artificial intelligence on people to make a decision on whether they might or might not reoffend and end up in the criminal justice system. You see, Jürgen, this is terrifying stuff, this.
Yeah. Yes, I'm aware of that. Also, I think especially in England, it's very usual that you have webcams and other types of cameras all over the place and all the streets. And then, of course, you can do automatic face recognition on all the data streams that you get from all these cameras. And then, obviously, you cannot only track terrorists, which is the official explanation why people want to do that, but you can also track all kinds of other people for other reasons, and all these privacy issues are really important, and many people are worried about these. In some countries, more than in others. Yeah. For example, in the country where I was born, there is a tradition of secret services spying and controlling the own population. Like in the Nazi time, of course, the Gestapo, and then in East Germany, the Stasi, very oppressive regimes. On the other hand, in England, the spy business has a very positive connotation because of what happened in Bletchley Park when the Nazi code was broken through British smart spies with the help of primitive computers and James Bond and so on. So all of that is more acceptable probably in England than on the continent, interestingly. However, many people also in Great Britain are worried about that, I know. And what do you have to do? You have to think about the possibilities, the consequences of misuses of that technology. And it's the same thing that we had to do when 800,000 years ago fire was invented. Fire is one of these basic technologies which changed everything. And people back then realized that you can use it to keep yourself warm at night and to cook. But you also can use it to create wildfires and to burn other people. And back then, when they realized that, they established an ethics commission. And they weighed the pros and cons of fire. And finally, in the final communique, the ethics commission came to the conclusion, well, yes, there are potential dangers, but also many potential benefits. So let's take these into account, but nevertheless, do not stop. Let's not stop the further development of fire. That's why we are talking right now.
And that's your attitude, and it's your outlook to the work that you're doing, and I totally understand that. I'm going to put one final point to you, Jürgen, and thanks again for coming on the program. Again, without an academic background in artificial intelligence, this is what I believe. I've come to believe, Jürgen, and it's just my personal belief, that we are in a simulation of sorts, a holographic construct. I really believe that. And because let me
quickly say something. You know who first published something about that? That was in 1967. That was Konrad Zuse himself, the guy who had also the first program-controlled computer in 1941. And he really wrote a book about this whole idea that all of physics and every simple physical law and everything is being computed on a huge cellular automaton. 1967.
That's old ideas, right. Basically. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have done great work, you know, since then. I just want to put this to you. So I believe this is what we live in. I really do believe that. And therefore, I believe that ultimately artificial intelligence is a virus of sorts, Jürgen. And all this transplantable technology and this transhumanist agenda, which I really believe it's terrifying. You know, the children are addicted to mobile phones. Now they're talking about implanted technology, chips, you know, putting chips in your hand to help make payment more easy and all of this. I think all of this ultimately is a virus, and it's ultimately going to prevent us from understanding what we're bloody doing here, what consciousness really is. And that's where I come from. Do you accept that that's a genuine possibility, or do you dismiss that?
No, I would dismiss that, but now we don't have enough minutes left on the show to explain the details. I have a very strong position on that, and maybe we'll have to delay that for the next show.
I'll get you back on, but as a scientist, as a man of science, I'm gonna do the old Jeremy Paxman to you. You're going to have to accept that even if you don't agree with it, you're going to have to, not accept, I shouldn't tell you what you have to accept, but I think you might have to acknowledge that, you know, some very, very clever minds like yours are saying that they believe it's a possibility. Rich Tyrrell said, yes, it could very well be a prison of sorts. So it is possible, Jürgen.
Yeah. So see, 20 years ago, I wrote a paper which is called A Computer Scientist's View of Life, the Universe, and Everything. And this is exactly about the simulation argument. And it turns out that there's a very, very short code which basically lists all possible universes and runs them all. Everything that is computable is being computed by that optimal, there's an optimal way of doing that, by this optimal algorithm, and it generates all possible programs, and they compute all possible outputs, including histories of universes, including ours. And in fact, ours is computed several times, because there's several programs that compute exactly the history of this particular universe. And now it turns out that because this algorithm has certain optimality properties, that you can make predictions about the future in a non-trivial way. I would need some more time to explain what I'm saying here.
Jürgen, I'll invite you back. I will invite you back.
The simulation argument and all this stuff is very deep ingrained in my whole philosophy and my whole way of looking at the world. And just notice that there are many universes, and since everything that is computable is being computed in this optimal scheme. In some universes, the future is going to be like this, and in other universes, it's going to be like that, and so on. And if you do believe that that there is pure determinism and that everything is deterministically computed, then in a certain sense, our whole discussion is predetermined,
yeah, that's right.
And things like that. So that raises a whole bunch of new issues which we haven't really discussed so far in this show.
But I'd love to have you back, Jürgen, to talk about it, because, you know, I think we'll disagree, but I will have you back, and you'll have plenty of time to discuss that. You know, my big question ultimately is, who would control that construct? Who designed it? Who built it? And why? And listen, I want to thank you for coming on. You've been a real gentleman to do that, and I think you are a gentleman, and you're obviously incredibly bright. We've just been speaking, folks, to the father of artificial intelligence. That is no exaggeration whatsoever, Professor Jürgen Schmidhuber. about the ethics of it, about the possibilities of it. Jorgen, thanks for coming on. Please come back again in the very near future, and we'll do an hour, and I'll give you plenty more time to talk about these issues. Thank you so much.
Richie, it was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Look after yourself. Professor Jorgen Schmidhuber on the line to us. I think he's in Bonn in Germany. And you heard him on the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and Tune In Radio. The time is the top of the hour. Very quick break. Back in a more with plenty more.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not being seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. Massively important issue that in the first hour with Professor Jorgen Schmidhuber. Hugely important to hear from people like Jorgen, who's been on the cutting edge of designing this technology for the best part of 2.5 decades there. When David used to speak to me on the radio, when I first began speaking with David over 10 years ago, I used to steer the conversation away from those subjects because I didn't have any interest in them. I didn't buy it. I didn't buy what David was saying, and I preferred to talk about politics and finance with David. So occasionally I get accused of parroting David. The truth is completely different. Having picked up David's books, read his theories and his hypotheses, and then began to examine it from my own point of view, looking elsewhere, checking the references, I came to understand that this is ultimately, not to give anybody any credit in Texas, but this is a prison planet. This is a, in my opinion, I'm not domineering, I'm not dictating to you, this is a prison construct. We live in a simulated reality. As David would say, a holographic universe. That's been designed to keep us from understanding what we really are and escaping it and understanding who we really are. I believe, as I said to Jorgen, who isn't part of any deep conspiracy, he's just a scientist who's doing what he does based on his belief that it's going to be for the betterment of humanity. But I believe wholeheartedly that I mentioned earlier on Ray Kurzweil, through the technology becoming superior, the humanity getting smaller and smaller and smaller in us until it's gone, us collected to this hybrid internet cloud, our perception being completely dominated and taken over. That's where I'm coming from. It was fascinating and marvellous to hear from people who are on the edge of this and are the people designing it, the people behind it, ultimately. So he was fascinating, and we will get him back on in the future. 3.5 minutes past the hour. Did a future version of us do this to imprison us? You know, does it come from chapter and verse from where David thinks it comes from? Which I've come to believe is right. That's where it does come from. Your thoughts and opinions, as always, to at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. It's going to get even, it's going to get equally as interesting in the next few minutes, because Richard Kahlberg is going to join the programme He's never been on before either. Listeners recommended Richard, got to know him last week. I think you're going to find him fascinating. Got some Irish music for you now, a bit of Irish music. Yeah, got the pail for you. This is Shut Up Venus on the Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2 ACR, tune in radio, richieallen.co.uk, and of course davidike.com. Check out davidike.com/headlines. Richard Kahlberg joins me in 3 minutes.
It's amusing to think. I thought that we'd be wed. Got a secretly pronounce you dead. Tim painted piggies. Got her deepest red. Asleep so cold in the same bed. The television and you, and now the closest of friends. A good digestion full of stories.
From Dublin, Ireland, a drum machine, a mandolin and a bass, and that's about it. Fantastic stuff. Matthew Devereaux on vocals. Shut Up Venus from 1991 on Your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting around the world on TuneIn Radio, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio and davidike.com. It's time to welcome our next guest to the programme. I think he's in London this evening. He's an engineer by education. And I mentioned today on Facebook his website, thenarrowgateweb.com. Check out thenarrowgateweb.com. It's fascinating. It is chock full of information on issues that he investigates. And these issues concerning what is really going on behind or in the world even. You know, the news, the truth behind the news headlines. He explores so many subjects, cymatics, DNA, ancient aliens, occult symbolism, ley lines and much more. I think he's in London. Let's welcome to the programme Richard Kahlberg. Richard, welcome. How are you?
Thanks very much, Richie.
Hey, welcome to the show. Are you in London, by the way?
I am, yes.
Good man. I reckon it's getting kind of humid there, is it, Richard? It's pretty warm today. I reckon it's warm down.
Yeah, it was a nice day today.
Lovely old day. Well, listen, congratulations on the website. Thanks for coming on. You're an engineer. How did you get into, and when did you get into subjects like cymatics, DNA, ancient aliens, the things I was mentioning in the intro? When did all that happen, Richard?
So thanks again for having me on the show. I'm truly humbled.
Really
nice to hear from
you.
That's a nice surprise. So I did a master's degree in mechanical engineering, and to be honest, during my degree, I didn't really do much truth seeking. To be honest, I'd always been aware of 9/11 since I was 13, 14, pretty early, 2004, I guess. But I didn't really start researching things until about 3-4 years ago. I thought cymatics, I can't remember how I fell into it, but from the moment I started researching Phi and Fibonacci series, it fascinated me. I have a logical mind since I did engineering, and I like things that I can prove with absolutes, with mathematics, and being able to prove that there's maths behind everything in nature from plants to the hurricanes, how they form, how riverbeds form, to the human body as well. I was really fascinated by that. Ancient aliens, I mean, I kept digging in different rabbit holes. You know, one thing led to another. I ask a lot of questions. I don't take, you know, simple, you know, any answers. You know, if someone tells me that it's one way, I want to verify it with my own research.
Good for you. Good for you,
and,
Richard.
And it doesn't matter how simple, how absurd something sounds. If something's ridiculous, you know, I'm not going to rule it out. I'm going to go check it out for myself, because I found in a few years of research, the more ridiculous something sounds, more oftentimes it sounds ridiculous because we've been programmed to think that it's ridiculous. It's part of the indoctrination. And so I never, even today, if I hear some crazy theories or anything, I'll explore it for myself. With a mindset of an engineer, I suppose, trying to you know, base everything in facts, in absolutes, rather than in opinion or anything that's not you know, doesn't have any facts backing it up. So that's my approach, I guess. And I started my website simply because I in my research I encountered a lot of good sources, very many good sources, including some of your work, but I struggle to find a place where a beginner, someone who's new to the truth movement, could simply pick up from page one and read and get the bigger picture of things without being overwhelmed with content. Like, you don't really know which websites to go to. You don't know who's truthful. You don't know what content's important. There's just an ocean of information out there. So I wanted to create a source that was snappy, to the point, and also lighthearted. So it's can be an enjoyable read, because, I mean, there's a lot of dark stuff going on in the world, as I'm sure you know.
There certainly is, yeah. By the way, a friend of mine in Dublin, I mention her often, Jean Ann Crowley, says your website is terrific. It's very well laid out. And I know my great friend and colleague, David Icke, will be delighted to hear somebody, you know, from an academic background such as yourself, talking about how the sense of the possible has been limited in us all, because it has been. There's no doubt about that. So, Richard, you applied the critical thinking skills that you acquired through your academic life to some of these issues. And I wanted to, first of all, I've tweeted Richard's website. Go to thenarrowgateweb.com. I've put it out there, tweeted. Go and have a look at it. It really is very well laid out. Very humble guy, is Richard.
Thank you.
It's very good. No, it's very good stuff. So, ordinarily, I would get a load of questions together and for guests, but what I'm going to do with you is something different. In the time we have, you can choose, Richard, what you'd like to talk to, whether it's an introduction to cymatics, whether it's an introduction to anything. It's really over to you. I know cymatics is fascinating for people, frequencies, vibration. Anything you'd like to get into, my friend, the floor is yours.
Well, that's a lot of responsibility. I could go off on any tangent.
Don't worry. I'm experienced enough, I'll gently steer you back. I'm sure you'll be fine. Well, would you like to talk a bit about cymatics? Maybe even define that for
people. We could start there. I mean, cymatics, there's a reason why I started with cymatics as the first post. So my website's laid out. If you go to the start menu in the top left, you get the menu of posts. And it's written more like a book. So it's like chapter by chapter. And later posts refer back to content that's been presented in earlier posts. Just so it kind of flows and presents like a coherent narrative for everything, because it's kind of hard to grasp all this information in one. So I tried to make one thing lead to another, and I started with cymatics because it's a scientific subject that's very tangible. You can see plants, you can see, you know, all the how sound manifests in matter. You can see that with your eyes, and it's not a conspiracy as such. It's just purely amazing science. And in DNA as well. But where the conspiracy comes into it is when you start researching, like, why this knowledge has been suppressed. You know, Nikola Tesla, Edlid Skounin, and people like that, and Dr. Royal Rife, these people knew about the power of sound and magnetism. And that, you know, leads into a few other posts that I have both written number 13 and 14, as well as a lot of material I have coming up. And so I started with it because it's something tangible. There's not much conspiracy to it as much as just being amazing and kind of it's a little hook and gives you an insight into the sort of knowledge that's being hidden by, you know, Freemasons and the occult.
So Richard, sound and frequency manipulates physical matter.
Exactly, yes.
There's no doubt about that, right?
Yes.
Now, talk to our listeners in terms of how sound and frequency can manipulate matter. We're talking about molecular level, right?
Well, everything every in the universe. If you, a good resource to go read, if to make sense of what I'm going to say, is my 13th blog post and a website, johndepew.com, I think it is. There's a link in that post. But everything in the universe is made up of three things. It's two equal and opposite currents and neutral particles of matter. And everything is vibrating, whether it's the couch I'm sitting on or it's you know, air or water. Everything has a frequency that it's vibrating at. And sound is a frequency as well. And you know what, you can control matter by controlling sound. So for example, an opera singer would be able to shatter a wine glass by singing at a pitch that matches the resonant frequency of the of the wine glass. This is what Royal Rife discovered when he, with his electron beam or energy beam, I forget what it's called exactly, but his machine, it could target the frequency of bacteria, including cancer, and together with a sideband frequency, he could destroy these cells using pretty much the same principle as an opera singer would destroy a wine glass and shatter those cells. So in a matter of weeks, he could heal people who are deeply ill with even the most severe tumors. But obviously this knowledge, you know, there's a control, you know, the pharmaceutical industry don't want this knowledge out there for financial reasons. Because their incomes, you know, there's business in people being sick, and also more than finances, it's about control. Because if people can manipulate, you know, heal their body with just sound, then they don't need the government and the system for everything. It's interesting because in India back in the day, the healers of villages were the shamans who played musical instruments. And it's because they could get the frequencies that could harmonize with the body and get, you know, healing frequencies. So there's a lot we can learn, and it's a very cool subject, this.
Oh, it's marvelous. And the evidence you're talking about, Richard, isn't anecdotal. There's historic evidence to back this up. And some of our listeners will be familiar with some of this, particularly those of our listeners who've been reading David's books going back to the early 90s. David talks about this, of course, frequency of vibrations, where it all began for him. But a lot of people listening to this will be hearing about it for the first time, and it's absolutely vital. There isn't, it isn't just anecdotal evidence. The evidence is there. It surrounds us, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And if we take it a step further, the human thoughts, I mean, when you really sit down and think about what thoughts are frequencies as well. And we're creating those frequencies when we think. That's the power of prayer. When we pray, we were thinking, creating new thoughts. And the issue comes when the whole society, or most of it at least, has been indoctrinated to such an extent that very few of our thoughts are actually original. And, you know, creating love in the world. And we're in a downward spiral, I guess, from the indoctrination we've received. So when you take control of your thoughts and your mind, you're taking control of what you're manifesting.
This is really, really good stuff, Richard. I want to mention again, we're talking with Richard Kahlberg. Go to thenarrowgateweb.com. That's his website, bookmarked, very well laid out site. A lot of information on these issues and more besides. So, of course, Richard, for all the positive applications you've just described for this, of course, there are negative ones too, right?
And
there absolutely.
And there are people who know that. Talk about the negative applications, how they might have been used against us. Inevitably, listeners are asking us, have buildings been brought down using this technology?
I mentioned that actually in my 15th blog post, Energy Weapons, Tesla Suppressed Technologies. So he created a small device which could, well, before I say that, the some listeners might be familiar with the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, which collapsed in the U.S. from, you know, a few days after it opened. There was strong winds, and the winds were blowing at the same frequency as the bridge, where has the natural frequency of resonation of the bridge caused it to wobble and then collapse eventually. And that same resonant, phenomena is inherent in everything, including skyscrapers. And Tesla discovered that. And he could make, there were reports in the news very often when he was living in New York about small earthquakes coming from his lab with an epicenter at his lab. It's very easy to with that sort of technology, which existed 100 years ago, to bring down a skyscraper or two or three. And also to make earthquakes. I mean, there's a lot of weather manipulation going on as well, which Tesla's technologies most certainly come into play. And then another example of how they use sound technologies against us there's recently been in the US, they're rolling out these technologies, sonar technologies or sound technologies, which can be targeted at crowds, rioters, and in particular the frequency of the throat. So if a rioter can't shout because they're having the frequencies being targeted to shut down the throat, they can't shout, they can't scream, they can't breathe, they're immediately immobilized. And these are weapons that are going to be used more and more against the general public. So it's a good idea to become aware of them and what we can counter.
Well, that's why you are here, Richard. It's brilliant to have you on the program. 21 minutes past the hour. This might sound a bit silly. Some of our listeners might think I'm a bit of an idiot, but based on what you're saying, and I first came across Cymatics the first time I saw David speak, and I tried it out, Richard. We've got this beautiful German Shepherd here called Jazz. She's an old woman now, Jazz. And I tried a little experiment, and I feel like a bit of an idiot, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's very, very brief. What I did was I sat alongside her, and in the calmest and gentlest voice, I said, Jazz, sure you're a horrible, ugly, rotten to look at old dog, so you are. And then I said to her, Jazz, you're absolutely gorgeous, you're beautiful to look at, blah, blah, blah. The reaction, Richard, was completely different. I swear on everything that's sacred. I've tried that a couple of times with her, and the reaction from her when the positive words were being used, beautiful, gorgeous, special, important, was completely different. The tone of voice is exactly the same, but the word has frequency, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's wow. There's an experiment made by a Japanese scientist called Dr. Masaru Emoto, where he put water. I'm sure you've seen this actually, because it's one of the first ones you see when you research the power of words and on water specifically. So he would put rice in different jars, and then each morning for a month he would say to the rice with water, he would say to one bottle or one jar, I hate you. Yeah. And then to another jar he would say, I love you, like you did with your dog Jazz. And after a month you could tell the jar he said he hates had decomposed, and the jar he said he loved hadn't decomposed much at all.
Isn't that just a wonderful example? And again, not to keep dropping his name in, but that video of that, you'll see that. Anybody who goes to see David Icke on the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, you'll see that video. In fact, next time he's in town, Richard, I'm going to get you to go. I'm going to get you set up to go and spend some time there, because these areas you're exploring, you have that much in common with David, who's been researching this stuff for years and years.
I did actually see him live last April in Brixton.
Oh, were you in Brixton? You were? Ah, well, there you go then. Yeah. I'm an idiot for saying that. You were there. You were in Brixton. Right. So just because I've just had a message there, just to explain what I've been asked to explain what the reaction was. When I sat alongside Jazz, she sat still and looked up at me with her ears pricked, but looking happy when I said the bad words. When I said the good words in the same sentence, the tail started wagging and she stood up. That's what the difference was. So just to clarify that. Mm-hmm. So the implications for this, Richard, I've also been asked to put to you. I've had an email from George, and George says, Richie, I remember you doing shows on Wilhelm Reich. What does Richard think of the work of Reich and the Orgone box and the Orgone energy generator? I'm sure you know all about it, Richard.
Orgone, it's actually a subject that I haven't covered yet.
You're going to get into it.
I've had it on my list for about 6 months to check out, but I've had so much writing to do. So I'm sorry, George, but I probably can't do justice to that because I don't know much about it.
You're going to have a lot of fun, Richard. And while you're on that journey, you can share that with us as you can come back and talk about. Because I only know what I was told by a great jazz bass player called Peter Ind, one of the best ever, in fact, who was a great student of the work of Reich. But yeah, it's all totally relevant. Go ahead, Richard. Yeah.
I know from brief looks at Orgone Energy that it's completely relevant, which is why I'm very keen to study it more. But I feel uncomfortable, commenting on subjects, as someone who, I guess, if you're on a show, you're a position of credibility or authority, I guess, and I don't want to comment on subjects that I haven't researched enough myself.
Oh, you're very honest.
So sorry for that.
You're very honest. What has it done to you, before we talk about other issues? What has coming to study this information done to you? What profound effect has it had on you? Because again, the information itself has an energy and a vibration of its own, Richard, as do you, and mm-hmm. you've opened yourself up to it. What's happened to you since you started looking into this?
Well, I think it's a journey. I guess you start questioning things a lot more. It becomes more natural. Before there was, you start looking into something, there's a lot of skepticism. I'm still skeptical of new things now, but there's an excitement rather than like a dread, like what am I going to find under this rabbit hole? What am I going to find under this rock? Whereas now it's like new information is really awesome, because I know that it's made me realize that as Socrates once said, real wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. And when you understand cymatics and the power that's inherent in nature with sound, and how little we understand it in the mainstream, you're filled with a sense of wonder, and you just want to research more and more and more. So that's it's filled me with a enthusiasm for research, which when you go through school, I was pretty indoctrinated myself with university degree in high school and everything, and I thought, with the way science is taught, we think that we know everything. When you're in school, everything's already been discovered. So there's nothing new to discover out there, because everyone's already discovered everything, where that's completely false. And studying these subjects have really opened my mind to possibilities and new subjects. And I've tried to summarize a lot of the subjects in my website. So I go from subject to subject and try to weave them in together as a narrative. But what's presented on my blog is just a very small fraction. And I'm hoping to get in a bit more detail in upcoming posts when things like start to come together a bit more. Because the truth is that I've written 29 posts so far. And the truth is those 29 are just the groundwork for what's to come. It's just the minimum, the base to kick off from. And I have a lot of material to post that's really, I think it's going to be quite exciting for people to read.
Well, as long as you stay, as humble and as grounded as you are, and as long as you continue to acknowledge your sources and where you get your information from, which sadly, of course, so many in the so-called independent media don't do. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not you, of course. That's why I was drawn to you. Yeah, and because of your humility, you need to get out there and, knock on a few more doors. I shouldn't have had to come to you, Kahlberg. You should have came to
Thank
us.
You.
I mean, because it's important that, you speak to people about this and share it. Daniel Ford's a good friend of mine, very interested mm-hmm. in this. And Daniel wants to take this on to symbols and how symbols themselves create frequency and have an effect on us. We're into symbology. Huge subject again, Richard.
Right, yes. Yeah, symbology. I mean, as you said, symbols have energy and numbers as well. I mean, this is what the occultists, everything is about numbers and symbols. And the meanings behind there. So, you know, corporate logos, many people don't think much of it, but I've been looking at that quite a lot. You start to see patterns, you know, Saturn logo, you see the cube, the 33, the 13s in logos, like McDonald's sideways is the 13. I mean, there's a lot of symbols and they carry power, because if you don't know, if you don't know the meaning behind symbols, they have power over you. It's like sorcery, I guess is a good word. And the way to beat it is to just become aware of it. So I focus a lot of time on simply pointing things out that might be simple truths, but quite self-evident. And you mentioned sources there. I don't know if I have a big work cited or anything like that, but I try to, anytime I present some information, I try to... add a snippet of information, you know, a fact or a statistic or a graph or an illustration or a photo or a quote or something that's going to back it up. And I try to do that with everything I put in my blog, and also point out to other people, because I'm far from an expert on you know, many of the subjects that I've written about, but I'm trying to present enough to show the bigger picture, as it were, instead of going into to specific rabbit holes. Because you can get lost in, you can spend years and years on cymatics, you can spend years on ley lines, you can spend years on 9/11 or Tesla's energy, you can spend years on any of those subjects. But I'm trying to show just the bigger picture of how they fit together. And, you know, to paint the story of, you know, who we are, why we're here, and, you know, what's going on. And
absolutely, Richard. Let me just drop in there something I mentioned on the show before. I'm a couple of miles away from Stockport, and in Stockport is this gigantic pyramid. And mm-hmm. It was built by the, for our listeners overseas, not a real one. It's a massive glass structure designed for and by the Co-op Bank. It's an incredible thing. I've often shared pictures of it on Twitter when we talk about these things. Just this huge glass, unbelievable, totally out of its depth, totally out of its it shouldn't be there effectively. And these things are there, and they're doing a number of things. People talk about communication, but at the same time they're having a profound effect on the people living in that area, seeing that every day, aren't they, Richard? There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely, and it's kind of like a symbol of control as well, of oppression, like on the dollar bill. Everyone's walking around with you know, the pyramid and the eye like in their pocket all day. They don't in the US, and they, you know, they don't think anything of it. But it's amazing how little people are aware of the symbols around them. I mean, if you walk walk through London streets, and you know, pretty much every other house, especially in the city of London, downtown and near Bank, there's just owls on the wall. There's, there's pyramids, there's everything. There's the hexagon, pentagrams all over the place. And, you know, cathedrals as well, the outside of buildings have a lot of, a lot of knowledge is hidden in plain sight, or all knowledge, really. I mean, if you go into Masonic temples, I've discussed that in my 13th blog post on magnetism, where the secrets of magnetism and how Edley Skalman's Coral Castle flywheel, has the same dimensions, same design as designs that can be found on the inside of on the walls of insides of Masonic temples and on the outside of cathedrals. So one thing I've come to discover in my research is that there are no secrets. The big secrets is there's no secrets. Everything is in plain sight, and you just have to realize it.
We're back to the sense of the possible again, because no matter how many researchers and journalists I bring on the program, I still get emails from people who listen because their spouse listens or their friend listens, who will say, it's absolutely garbage, this. It's ridiculous, because our sense of the possible has been damaged. Has been affected by the same symbols, by the same frequencies and the same sounds that we've been talking about. So people look at it now and say, ridiculous rubbish that, you know. And yet, yeah. And yet it's, as you said, it's in plain sight. The owl, Richard, that conjures up, of course, images of Bohemia Grove and, you know, the cremation of care. They love the owl, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, I've done a dedicated two posts, post 5 and 6 on my website, specifically to the owl. So first, in fifth post, links to the ancients, I show about Bohemian Grove, you know, kind of a little sneak peek into what they do there, and then I tie the owl. You know, you can see owl symbology in ancient Greece, in Mesopotamia, in Egypt. You know, all of these societies, the Aztecs, and you start to see how the same deities have been worshipped for thousands of years. And then I show in the sixth post that the owl symbolism. My post is called Owls Everywhere. Because they are everywhere. I mean, walk around London or any city, you see these famous buildings. You know, you'll see owl symbolism very often, and it's all just you know, Moloch worship out in the open. And you know, when you're not awake, as I was saying earlier, when you're not awake to these the symbols, you don't realize that they're there until you know there's nothing secret about them. They're right there in front of you. And you know, in the age of information, ignorance is a choice. You can research it. You can find any answer you want on the internet. Just ask questions. So there's really no excuse anymore.
Richard Kahlberg is on the line from London. His website is thenarrowgateweb.com. Thenarrowgateweb.com. Richard is an engineer, and over the last few years, he's begun to examine some of the issues that. Me personally, that I've been into for about 10, 12 years now through my various relationships with people. He's applying the critical thinking skills that he developed through academia to go the other way, to accept, as Richard said himself earlier on, you know, the true knowledge is in knowing that we don't know anything, and to examine things that many would think as ludicrous or as absurd. Do check the website out, because it's very well laid out, very well explained. Very easy to read, terrific stuff. Loads of tweets coming in on this, so I'm going to just read a few quick tweets out there, Rich. You want to just have a sip of water there?
Yeah, thanks.
Not that you need to have one, but if you want to have one.
Thanks.
Lee BGB says, can Richard talk about flat earth stuff, please? If Richard wants to do that, we can do that in a second, surely. Hi to Luga, who says, spend 6 months or more in nature, then return to a city or town. You will notice every energetic impurity. Through these symbols. Hi to Dean Smith as well. Let me scroll down, because an enormous amount of tweets came in. Daniel came back to say, pyramids, Stonehenge and other constructs are built as and where they are. Numerology to have the most effect on us. Hi to David Dondre. Let me scroll down there. I missed an awful lot of tweets that came in here about these issues as well. A lot of people just saying that they're fascinated by it, they're really interested in it. And Masroth came on to say about the words being spoken to the dog, to Jazz. It wasn't the words, says Masroth on Twitter. It is what you, Richie, were thinking. Your brain is a quantum computer and transmitter of its own. And Rich Mortimer tweets, everything has a natural harmonic frequency. Richard got into that at the very beginning of the segment there. Richard, I've not bothered with, this is in no way to influence what you're going to say. Don't think it is, it isn't. Might sound like it is, but it isn't. I haven't bothered at all with flat earth at all. I haven't. It's not something
I gathered. I was trying to, you know, before the show, I was looking at, you know, Googling your name with flat earth and seeing what your take was on it. So I understood that you perhaps undecided, or perhaps hadn't looked at it.
Haven't looked at it. I mean, ultimately, you know, I don't think you heard the first hour of the program, but I put my cards on the table. For me, we're in a holographic construct. This is a simulation, I believe. That's what I've come to believe independently of anybody else. And that's been written, designed by ancient entities. And within that, it's, you know, we live on a globe within that. So that's what I've come to understand. Okay. Do you know what I think before I shut up and let you say what you think? I think I've become a bit pissed off with the behaviour of some of the people in this flat earth society You know, in the domineering attitude of them, the way they say that if you don't accept that the earth is flat, you're a shill, and everything else you say is
not. I agree.
This is garbage. So it's over to you. I'll shut up. What do you think of it?
Well, I'll tell you the I agree with the flat earth, the general society. I mean, there's, first of all, flat earth society, which you mentioned, is a controlled opposition. It's there for anyone who only casually glances at the subject. They'll you know, they're gatekeepers, flat earth society. They'll get caught in that, and you know, flat earth society presents a lot of false truths, false information, and things that just look ridiculous off the bat and can never be true. And I'm very quick to point out that they, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, I don't like to use the word chill, but there's a lot of people in the flat earth, you know, calling themselves flat earthers, who will just go on the internet and just attack people. And so I don't like to use globe heads or you know, any derogatory words, because we're all just looking for the truth, regardless of if we believe the earth is flat or, you know, round or whatever. I mean, we're all, you know, brothers and sisters, and, you know, we can discuss things with a smile on our face and just, you know, base it on facts rather than emotional reasoning, which unfortunately tends to happen with a lot of discussions on this subject, because it is quite volatile, the reactions you get, because it is very far out there. But as I said earlier, with exploring cymatics and magnetism and how nature works, I came onto questioning things on another level. And, you know, I was open to anything, as long as there's evidence. And the evidence I've found, you know, I studied mechanical engineering, and I deal in absolutes. The evidence I found is overwhelmingly that we live on a flat earth. You mentioned the holographic universe. I agree in part with that as well. There's no reason why a holographic and flat earth don't match together. And I think you might particularly find it interesting to read my 16th post, which is the Taurus and ancient cosmology, where I take the knowledge that I presented in the first post on cymatics, and then the 13th post on magnetism, and then 14th on crop circles, showing how the energy in nature and cymatics, if you think the smallest things have those cymatic patterns, you know, plants and sunflowers and everything, you know, you should be able to extrapolate that up to the bigger system. And that's exactly what I did in that post. And I showed how the flat earth system perfectly matches you know, the magnetic torus model that we find in nuts and apples or other fruits and trees in nature. And the plane, flat plane, matches as well with what we'd expect from vector equilibrium and other mathematical you know, models. So it's a purely I start leading into flat earth in post 16 there, with linking cymatics to flat earth. And then also showing how all the ancient societies had the model of a flat earth. I mean, when we today, we think back, you know, 500, 1,000, 2,000 years ago, we view ancient societies as being mentally inept. You know, they thought they lived on a flat earth. It's like a running joke. But how did they come to the conclusion that they lived on a flat earth? They didn't have iPhones. They didn't have, you know, televisions. They didn't have, you know, big textbooks. They just had nature and their eyes and their senses, and they came, you know, unanimously across the whole world.
And their travels, right. But what about the spherical other planets then? What about the planet Saturn, the planet Jupiter, Uranus, Mars, the rest of them? What about those?
Well, they're luminaries. It's actually discussed in the Book of Enoch, how they're stars, that you know, they just have different appearance. And when you look, I mean, I've looked through telescopes, and, you know, what I see, it's not, you know, I don't see a spherical ball like a basketball. You know, it's more like lights. I've discussed that in my 27th post, called "The Stars Declare the Truth," where you can see, when you look at stars with a camera, you can capture the cymatic patterns of it. It's beautiful lights. And you know, one question leads to another. I mean,
yeah, of course,
I've covered
I will read these posts, by the way. I'll give them the respect that they deserve. Of course, I will.
Thank you. I mean, I understand that it's a tough subject to grasp, but we need to realize how much indoctrination we've received throughout our life.
You're bringing up a really good point now, because my next point, and it certainly isn't in any way cheeky or rude, but does it bloody matter? I mean, I believe, again, through David's work and then looking at the references where David got it from, I believe that it's very credible, the idea that the holograph itself is being projected through the moon and through Saturn. And I like that theory. Do you know what? If the whole thing is the prison construct that we live in, I'm speaking about this in the first hour with my first guest, talk about it quite a lot, and it's to prevent us from really understanding who we really are, which is, of course, what you're writing about. Does it bloody matter whether it's a globe or whether it's flat?
Yes, it absolutely matters.
Why?
I'll explain a little bit about the post itself before I get back to why it matters. So I've laid out my post on Flat Earth in a sequential manner to kind of guide readers through the material, because there's a lot of questions you're going to have when you get into Flat Earth, like what's going on here. So I really invite people to read in a sequence as a series, because I start with laying out who NASA are, like what they've done, and then just simply looking around, like how do we with simple mathematical calculations we can prove that there's no curvature, and that's maths. That's not my opinion. That's pure maths, and it's all presented in my 18th post. And then I go through each topic and present it. I haven't yet got around. So my post's 28 to 31 or so, which I've jumped over actually. There's got some material on which will start to explain why does it matter.
Richard, are you working at the same time you're researching and writing? You must be, obviously, to make a living.
Yes, I do. I do a part time job.
so part time, right? You want to commit to this probably long term. I presume you're looking at publishing a volume or a book of some description.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be working with Zen Garcia, actually, who's published a number of books, and he's going to help me convert my blog into a book. But I don't want people to get the impression that I'm I don't do this for financial gain. I just want to present this information to people to wake them up, because I don't like living in a world where everyone's asleep.
No, mate, but everybody has to eat, number one. But number two, it's important that the more people who understand it, who are in a position to be able to put it together in a way that it is understandable, the better for the world. David Icke is a young man, but he's not going to be around forever. I mean, he might be. He might live another 40, 50 years, I hope he does. But in 60, 70 years, if we're still here fighting this battle, chances are David won't be here. So it's important that people take it on, take on this info, understand it, and disseminate it in a way that is is easy for people to digest. Richard, what do your family and friends think of all of this?
Yeah,
I'll say like this, I
have less friends than I used to. I have closer friends though, people who understand the truth and what I'm presenting, what I'm working for, they understand it's a tough thing to do, dedicate your life to just writing about stuff that's very controversial. No one likes the negativity of conspiracies, but that's why I started my blog. So I was struggling to explain, how do I explain cymatics in a way that makes sense to people? How do I explain owls and 9/11? How do I explain all this stuff to families and friends in a way that is coherent? Not going to overwhelm them with negativity, because I get that a lot. I'm so negative.
You're not at exactly. all. You don't come across as that. But of course, people don't want to hear it.
Exactly.
And so that's the bravest thing in the world. The bravest thing you can ever do is tell people whom you love and respect what they don't want to hear. Whether it's you've put on too much weight, Richie, you need to go for a few more jogs or whatever the bloody hell. It's difficult to do that.
Absolutely. Your best friend is the one who tells you the most truth.
That's
and,
right.
It is challenging at times to, you know, people wonder what I'm doing with my life. I mean, I'm you know, challenging my mind and just sharing knowledge. And I think the it helps that I get so much feedback from people who listen and read that it's very humbling and motivates me to keep going. So I thank anyone who's reading and you know, listening to this show as well, and for the tweets as well, for the, you know, finding it interesting. It's very humbling.
It's huge, Richard. Richard, tell me this. This isn't a loaded question at all. It will sound it, but it isn't. You know, having that bit of difficulty with, you know, family and friends, how much more respect now do you have for Maxwell, for Ike, for Jim Mars and the others? And the hits, the real hits, David more than anybody, I suppose, that they've taken over the years for daring to, you know, talk about these issues.
I mean, it's challenging to talk about these. So yeah, I mean, you get a different perspective on what different people are doing, and yeah, in my own perspective, I mean, I choose to, instead of pursue a full time job and you know, the pleasures of life, I suppose, you know, I pursue knowledge and truth, and there's nothing more important in the world than that. You know, and I'm sure people who, you know, will read the material I have coming up in my blog will, you know, start to, you know, agree with that as well a bit more. I mean, you asked why does the flat Earth matter? I mean, the big question with flat Earth, you know, I'm sure you're aware of. If you start realizing that we're on a flat plane, then we start to think about, you know, why are we here? You know, who put us here? We're thinking about a creator. And that's where you start to really open doors. So I don't view the flat Earth as the ultimate truth. Far from it. It's a gate. It's a gate to walk through. And it opens up so many more doors to new truth.
If it's true, of course, it is relevant. Everything that is true is relevant. So just to go back to that, you do have enormous respect for the people who've brought us to where we are now, continue to research these issues and put this information out there.
I'm a bit hesitant to say, but my opinion of, I mean, David Icke, I think there's a certain, and Jordan Maxwell, it's a bit new age. It's a little bit of a deception, going on there, and I don't know. I'm hesitant to bring it up because I know you're friends with David.
You think there's a deception going on?
I think the whole idea of evolution and ascension. This is a new age deception that's starting. You know, it has its origin in Satanism. You know, be your own god, do as thou wilt. These sorts of ideas that you're your own god and you're ascending. That's part of, you know, some deceptions to come. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think you couldn't get any further away from New Age than David. And with regards to the satanic nature of what's going on in the world, I don't know if too many people alive that have done as much as he has to bring that to the attention of people. Satanic child abuse.
I think
the symbolism you talked about earlier on. I mean, much of what you write about is chapter and verse what David has been writing about for years. It sounds incredibly disrespectful, Richard.
Oh no, I was very hesitant. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I have a lot of respect.
And that's why I asked you the question a second time, because I could hear that hesitation. Much of what's on your website is chapter and verse from David's books over the years. I'm not saying you plagiarized it, but a lot of the information you've got, you've obviously gotten it through David.
I've seen David speak live for 10 hours last April, but I've never picked up one of his books, to be honest with you, though I've seen a lot of his videos. But I mean, I would implore people to, you know, hear me out on this. Listen, read the 25th post in my blog, which is called Exposing the New World Order Alien Deception. And I mean, we've been, if I go off on a tangent there in a little bit, just to bring it back later, we've been indoctrinated through television to believe in the idea of aliens and alien saviors and Pleiadians and you know, down that rabbit hole. And the idea of ascension ties in perfectly with that, and it's also what's coming out of the occult with Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey. I don't claim to have all the answers. So please, anyone listening to this who disagrees, I welcome people who ask questions. Question things. And it's a new take, you know. If you listen and disagree with me, that's fine.
We love people who have a different point of view than us, Richard, and we always will. Just be careful about using words like deception about people like David Icke and Jordan Maxwell. You know, right. It's not going to serve you very well, because whether you agree or disagree with these people, and damn right you're entitled to disagree with them, and you can disagree with them on this program, you can have the platform, but don't suggest these people are deceiving anybody. You're not going to get very far with that, mate.
Okay. You said, I'm not in this to serve myself. I'm just sharing knowledge, and you know, people can question it and approach it however they want. I invite people several times in my blog. I've written, question everything, including me, question everything I've written, be skeptical, ask questions, and, deception might be a strong word, but you know, I invite people to question, and I'm not serving myself. I have no interests. I don't want to earn money from this. The only thing I want is to have this information out there, and it's a big burden to have a lot of this information that can, change people's minds, make them awake.
Like, well, Richard, I will certainly invite you back on the program. There's no doubt about that. To discuss these issues further. I'm cutting in because we're right out of time. I'm going to again mention your website. I tweeted it out already. To read Richard's articles, get on to thenarrowgateweb.com. That's thenarrowgateweb.com. Bookmark it, read it. You can interact with Richard there as well. It's been fascinating, Richard. Thanks for coming on the program. First time of asking. That 50 minutes has flown by. I enjoyed your company and I look forward to hearing from you again.
Thanks very much. And I invite anyone who's listening, if you have questions or anything, I answer every email. You can get in touch with me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Richard Kahlberg, and on Facebook. All the details are on my website, on the contact page. So please get in touch, questions, feel free to criticize, to question, I'll try my best to answer everything. Thanks to you also, Richie. It's been a very pleasurable to have a chance to chat with you.
It's terrific, Richard.
And very, very humbling.
It's why the program exists, mate, to hear from people like you doing this research, putting your stuff out there. That's what the platform is there for. Thanks for doing it. TheNarrowGateWeb.com. Thanks, Richard. Bye for now. We've got to get out of the program. It's 3.5 minutes to the top of the air. The program will, of course, be repeated on the usual players, but the podcast will be online real soon. And thereafter, of course, we will have these interviews on YouTube. Big thanks again to our guest. You heard Richard Kahlberg there. And in the very first hour, Professor Jürgen Schmidhuber was on the program from Bonn in Germany. Got a fascinating show for you tomorrow. Jim Mars returns to the program after an absence. Jim is back. And Liz Croken joins me as well to talk about Petergate. You don't want to miss that. That's on tomorrow's program. It was introduced, edited and produced by myself, Richie Allen. Thanks for listening. Stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines. Until tomorrow, Thursday, it's bye from me. All the best. Arrivederci. See you tomorrow at 7. Bye now. Somehow
strong.